There are a couple of matters worthy of attention that we're going to now focus on with my next guest. The massacres on the streets in Chicago are continuing. Most recently, 60 people shot during a weekend. Then there was the continued promise of a blue wave in November, with a special House election in Ohio being embraced as proof that the wave was going to happen. With us now to talk about these subjects is a CNN and Real Clear Politics contributor. He also served on the Trump Hispanic Advisory Council, Steve Cortez. Thanks for being here today, Steve.
Hey, you bet. Thanks so much for having me.
And you can check out Steve on Twitter, at Cortez Steve, and keep up to date with his view on things, along with his frequent appearances on CNN and on Real Clear Politics on the web as well. 60 shootings in one weekend in Chicago, and yet Mayor Rahm Emanuel seems immune. I mean, they talk about Teflon. This guy's right. Got to have a Teflon bubble around him.
Right. It's really unbelievable. It would be comical if it weren't for the actual human suffering out there, for the blood in our streets. It would almost be laughable the degree to which he seems immune from consequences. Our city is absolutely awash in debt. We're a fiscal nightmare. Both Chicago and the state of Illinois are really America's version of Greece when it comes to our fiscal situation and our pension, our upside-down pension obligations. And then even worse than that financial situation, and they are related, though, I think, in a lot of ways, is the criminality, which is just infesting the streets of Chicago. This is my hometown, by the way, where I live. Born and raised here, raised a family in the city in Chicago. But I have to tell you, that's getting to be more difficult because the crime is not just rampant. It's also spreading geographically throughout the city. It used to be confined to a few sort of, well-known gang areas. And that's not okay, by the way, because there are still children and people who want to live regular lives in those neighborhoods. So that was already a bad situation, but it's getting even worse, spreading throughout the city. And you mentioned it's really just horrific. Last weekend, 60 people shot. It was the bloodiest weekend of this year, but I wish I could say it were an outlier, but it's not. There have been many weekends over the last several years like that. The previous year's record, unfortunate record, was over 100 people shot over 4th of July weekend in July of 2017. So we have a systemic crisis here in Chicago. It's really a slow motion massacre, and one mostly of young black men, and one that doesn't get very much attention. And I think the main reason it doesn't is because Chicago is such a blue city, such a Democratic stronghold. We have a 50-person city council here, all 50 of them Democrats, obviously Democratic mayor, close ally of President Obama. And there seems to be no consequences for any of them, despite the fact that people are suffering and dying in our streets.
Well, with all these injuries and violence and deaths that are taking place, what does the, for lack of a better phrase, city leadership say about this?
Well, for the most part, they ignore it. Or when they do respond, there's two ways, both of which are just misbegotten. One is they'll try to blame guns. And by the way, I hate when they call it gun violence. There's plenty of guns, for example, in the suburbs of Chicago. More guns, surely, because at least more legal guns, because they're allowed. Chicago has some of the strictest gun laws in America. So, gun control, Chicago's Exhibit A in the failure of gun control. Strict gun laws have not kept guns out of the hands of criminals who don't respect gun laws anyway, and Chicago proves that. So what we have really, the headlines are always gun violence. I would rather just say violence, or gang violence, because the fact that they use guns is almost immaterial in my mind. So that's one response, which is, totally unfair, and it's a deflection. And then the other grand deflection, which I write about in Real Clear Politics, which drives me crazy, is Mayor Emanuel spends most of his time publicly criticizing President Trump. So rather than looking at, rather than having any even semblance of introspection and self-reflection and saying, wow, what are we doing wrong in Chicago? How can we try to fix this crisis? Instead of looking inward, what does he do? He looks outward and tries to create a boogeyman, a scapegoat for the failures here, and that has mostly been President Trump. And it's a time-honored tactic, unfortunately, of failed despots. For instance, we saw Castro do this. He made an art of it for decades. Instead of talking about the misery on the island of Cuba, blame the United States. Blame the embargo. There's an external enemy that's our problem, not what we're doing here. Very much the same tactic employed often by Mayor Emanuel. And I think it's despicable. I think we need new leadership in this city, to be sure. But in the meantime, and this is what I wrote about in my article, I really think we need federal help. And I generally love local control. I'm a constitutionalist and a federalist. I always prefer for the solutions to be as local as possible. But in this case, the city of Chicago has failed so miserably at so many levels that I really think a lot of federal intervention is necessary, because it's just, it's a slow motion riot. It's a slow motion massacre on the west and south sides of this city. And that's not okay for us to tolerate in America.
And, you know, troops aren't the only thing that the government can offer now, because certainly we've seen through economic policies in the Trump administration that black and Hispanic unemployment is at record lows. But in a circumstance like Chicago is right now, I can imagine more businesses shutting down, moving out. Who's going to start a new business and hire these days?
Right. No, and I think that's the unfortunate reality, is it's very difficult to convince enterprises and people that they should move into Chicago. I haven't seen the stats yet for 2017, but in 2015 and 2016, we were the only major city in America that lost population. In general, America's been urbanizing, you know, for decades, and so most cities just continue to grow and grow and grow. Some at much faster paces than others, but generally all cities grow. Chicago was the unfortunate exception to that, and Cook County is a county, which is, you know, in and surrounds Chicago, also lost people. So people are unfortunately voting with their feet, and certainly businesses are as well. You know, and we can't blame them. And exactly right. I think it's hard to attract a business who wants to come into a place that is constantly in the headlines for violence and as a war zone. So there's economic reasons. And by the way, I think part of the reason things are so bad here is because of the economic situation we put ourselves in. We don't have the police and the resources for the police that we should have in this city. On top of that, the police force really believes, and, you know, with justification, that this mayor doesn't have their back. And so they really, and I don't really blame them, they've become a reactive force rather than a preemptive force, meaning they show up after the crime is committed, rather than trying to deter crime in the first place. And one of the reasons is, whenever the cops in this town get into any kind of an iffy situation or get accused of wrongdoing, and look, there are absolutely some bad cops who do bad things here and everywhere, but for the most part, they're overwhelmingly honorable and brave and good. And even those cops who aren't doing something wrong but get accused or, you know, get dragged in any kind of controversy, the mayor turns on them immediately. And they know that, and they act accordingly. And that's part of why we've seen this explosion of violence in Chicago.
We've linked to Steve's article, A Real Clear Politics, too. You can read more about the current state of affairs in Chicago. We're talking with Steve Cortez, CNN, A Real Clear Politics contributor. He also served on the Trump Hispanic Advisory Council. You're listening to Issues and Ideas. We were told that the special election of Ohio 12 was going to be further proof, although I haven't seen any proof yet, but further proof of a great blue wave coming in November. And, of course, the Democrats basically, even though they're the difference has narrowed to around 1,500 votes the last time I looked, because magically they found 600 votes. But the Republican candidates claiming a win, the Democrats are claiming a win no matter what, because it was a closer than expected race, so they want the participation trophy apparently. But I looked at the special election so far this year. County Ohio, there's 51. Democrats flipped 11, Republicans flipped 2. So out of 51, the Democrats had a net gain of 9. Not exactly sign of a blue wave, is it?
Right. No, it's not. And, you know, I have to say, you know, I made this joke on air that what do they call the guy who graduates last in his class from medical school? Well, they call him doctor. In a similar vein, if you win the Ohio seat by, say, one vote, what do they call you? They call you congressman. So whether you win by one vote or 100,000 votes in that district, you still won. Now, having said that, I will say, I am nervous about the fall election. I am. There clearly has not been a blue wave, not yet. But what they have done well in special elections of Democrats is they have outperformed in those districts pretty significantly what Trump did in those districts. And I think the main reason for that, quite frankly, is that Trump wasn't on the ballot in those special elections. He's not officially on the ballot in 2018 either. But I believe that we, both the president, the party, all of us, people like me who are in media, who, you know, embrace the Trump agenda, we need to convince the American people that it really is a referendum on Donald Trump, the 2018 election, the midterm. And the reason I say that primarily is because the Democrats, while they're trying to be coy about it and they kind of whisper about it, let's just be honest, they are hell-bent on impeaching this president. And if they get control of the House of Representatives, I have no doubt that there will at least be a vote on impeachment, if not success on impeaching the president, over some ridiculous grounds, you know, whatever narrative they can derive from the Mueller report when that's finally issued. It won't be a real crime, but there'll be, you know, a narrative of collusion or conspiracy or whatever it is. It'll give them the justification they need on specious grounds to impeach the president. And I'm saying we need to prevent that because the Trump agenda is rolling along and producing magnificent results for this country, particularly economically so. The last thing we need is to make a Democratic speaker, whether it's Speaker Pelosi or somebody else, get in the way of that agenda and grind us to a halt for 2019 by going down a ridiculous canard of impeachment. So I think if we nationalize the election, I think the Republicans, quite frankly, are the underdogs right now. History argues that. The polls argue it. But it's very, very winnable the way we rally and overcome the odds and keep the House, in my view, is to nationalize it and make it a referendum on Donald Trump.
You can watch him on CNN as a regular contributor. Read him on Real Clear Politics and also on Twitter at Cortez Steve. Steve Cortez, thanks as always for being here.
You bet. Thanks for having me.